The FLOWS programme at CU Boulder bridges social justice and environmental issues. FLOWS stands for Foundations for Leaders Organising for Water and Sustainability, and it provides leadership training, green job skills and free energy and water upgrades for members of the community while building partnerships between CU students and staff and community members. Now, they primarily work with low-income communities for water and energy conservation because those are the communities most in need of lower energy and water bills. I spoke with Angela Maria Ortiz Roja and Magnolia Landaposas, who are FLOWS coordinators, as well as with Michelle Gabriella Parrish, who's the Energy and Climate Justice Programme Manager at CU Boulder's Environmental Centre. She says that communities that they work with are most in need of lower energy and water bills, but they're also the communities that are using the least amount of energy.
You know, really the smallest carbon footprints in Boulder are from low-income community members. So trying to raise up awareness about that leadership and also trying to help that community find more voice in leadership doing this work.
There has been a lot of discussion, and we've talked about this on KGNU, around how there's often a white gaze when it comes to environmental advocacy. You don't have a lot of diversity very often in environmental justice groups. I know that is changing, but you also don't necessarily have an acknowledgement of the practices that already exist in diverse communities. There's often a top-down approach in terms of these are the practices you must embrace to be more sustainable, as opposed to looking at the practices that potentially exist already and embracing them because they're out there, but they might have slightly different names. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that is definitely true with language and the way that we talk about sustainability and what sustainability is. And that top-down thing that you were talking about, there's been a lot of research into environmental organizations in the country and seeing how diverse are they in terms of gender and race. And what has been found is that essentially there is sometimes equality in terms of the amount of people of color as interns or lower level positions within environmental organizations. And the higher up you go in an environmental organization, the more likely it is to be white and male run. And out of the largest environmental organizations in the country, the vast majority are run by white males. So there is that idea that that's what environmentalist looks like. A lot of times when I speak in classes at CU, I ask people, like, name some environmental leaders that you can think of. I used to hear Al Gore being number one. Now Elon Musk is number one. You know, and so just trying to shake that up a little bit, and even talking about heroes that people know of usually as social justice heroes like Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez that actually were working on environmental issues and pesticides. And so just trying to highlight some of that leadership and tease apart even this thing about language and what kind of science background do you have to be a sustainabilista. Really, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, even though there is really solid science behind it and is very grounded in science, at the same time, a lot of it is very logical and makes sense, especially to people from any kind of intact or traditional culture. Because in order to be intact, that means you have to have been doing something sustainable for the last however many thousands of years. So, yeah, we're trying to tease that apart a little bit and also help the community see their practices as being sustainable, you know. So when we have people reusing containers for food, you know, there's always these jokes about, like, who knows what's in the margarine container and the cottage cheese container. It's like you're going to open that up and you have no idea if it's actually cottage cheese in there. It's like last night's dinner leftovers. So trying to name that as sustainability practices, not just being frugal in those communities. So yeah, we're trying to break that up a little bit, and you know, not just in the name of equity, but also in the name of sustainability, because we're not going to get to our sustainability goals, we're not going to get to our climate goals if everybody is not involved and if the majority of people feel isolated from that movement. So it's actually imperative to sustainability that we get this leadership and these voices heard, because we will not get where we need to go without everybody.
Well, Angela, give us a sense of how FLOWS works actually in the community, how all of this manifests itself on the ground.
So FLOWS has a group of technicians that consist of students and residents of low-income communities. And what we do is that we go out into communities that we have already pre-identified that are low-income as well. And we go once or twice a month during the weekend. And we go in couples, in pairs, we go into different units. And what we do is that we have one of the technicians conduct the upgrades. So changing the light bulbs, changing the faucet aerators, making sure that there are no leaks in the toilets, the refrigerator and the freezer are working properly. And then simultaneously, we have the other technician who is conducting a little like questionnaire survey with the resident of the household. And what we do is just from that questionnaire, there's this natural dialogue that is ignited during our visit, and together we share what sustainability means to us and what practices we are doing at home. And it's very interesting because we find out that a lot of these communities are doing a lot more than what we think and that we give them credit for. So it's really nice because some of these communities, most of these communities are communities of color or immigrant communities. So it's been very powerful to be able to kind of rescue some of those traditions that we forget or want to deny when we migrate. So it's been very, we learn a lot as technicians as we go into these households because people are already doing a lot of really cool things that sometimes, like we've said before, we don't see a sustainability practice, but they're just natural for us. So that's kind of what it looks like to go into a home visit. They usually last between 20 to 30 minutes, and sometimes we end up sitting up for lunch and drinking coffee, and the dialogue that happens there is very powerful. And I feel like what we're doing not only is it going there and providing these free upgrades for the community, but just celebrating culture and traditions.
Well, Magnolia, you're also a technician with FLOWS, and give us a sense of when you are going into households that are already practicing some sustainability practices, but we don't necessarily label it as such. I mean, Michelle gave us an example of just the simple act of reusing some of the plastic tubs that we get food in. What are some of the other things that are happening out there already in communities that really are sustainable and environmentally friendly, but as we said, maybe don't have that label?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most beautiful, and I think Angela alluded to this a little bit, is the conversation that we have with technicians, which is having the opportunity to remind them and really celebrate the things that they are doing at home. It's pretty much, I think, the highlight of the visits, because folks are able to be like, oh, wow, I'm actually contributing to a more clean and sustainable future. And that realization not only empowers them, but also empowers their children, which is, like, great, because then you get to see them, like, interacting with their kids. Like, see, this is why it's important that we are reusing our containers, that we're putting our clothes out to dry in the, like, on top of, like, the doors, like, hanging clothes on the doors, making sure that they're not using as much, like, electricity, making sure food waste, right, making sure that they're eating everything in their plate, not only because it's healthy for them, but also because it means that it's energy that's being used to produce it and that other folks in the world might not have that same opportunity to have that food at the table. And it's also just great to hear the things that they used to do back in their countries and that they've either forgotten about or have not been able to do in this country. And so, like, trying to rethink, like, how do we compost however it is that we used to compost back in El Campo? How do we do that back here? What does that look like to do it in your house? Or talking even about clothing, right? Like, how do we take care of our clothes? And how do we treat our clothes with kindness to make sure that it lasts as long as it possibly can? And the other great thing is also even conversations around, like, water use and showers, which has been really interesting because I think that some of the elders, like, take less showers. And when you first ask them, like, how many times do you shower? They're like, oh, every day. And then we're like, well, you know, it would save a lot of water if you, like, try maybe, like, showering less, or even if you're going to shower every day for less minutes. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, actually, I take a shower every other day because, you know, you're not supposed to be using that much water and you're still clean. So it's, like, for them also being able to embrace their practices has been really beautiful. So around water use.
We've had a lot of different things. We did one day where we installed toilets that were donated by Kohler. And they were dual flush. Some of them were dual flush toilets. So you push one button for number one and a different button for number two. And I was really worried about making sure the whole family would be there to explain this high-tech dual flush technology and make sure they were doing it right. And so I, you know, kept being like, we got to get everybody in here, like the kids and the parents and stuff. And so I started telling the parents that I wanted everybody there to explain how this toilet works. And they're like, oh, we obviously know how this toilet works. We got it. And we have been totally confused since we got here. And they were from Mexico. They were like, we've been so confused as to why we waste so much water here. And we basically have no choice. Like, you have to, you know, pee into your fresh water and then flush it all away. So we've been waiting for something like this and we don't know what took so long. So that was an interesting flip, you know, where you're like, we're bringing the latest and greatest. And they're like, well, where has it been? Because what we've had has been ridiculous and has been really wasteful. So that was one. We had another one that I talk about a lot where we did a rain barrel installation training. The city has passed that ordinance and, you know, the state has really gotten us ready to be able to harvest rainwater in barrels. And so we were helping the city do a training and give out some free rain barrels. And we had all these kids were super interested. And there were a few parents that were sort of hanging out further out, you know, and didn't seem very interested. And so I went and talked to one of them. It turned out she was from South Sudan. And I asked her if she wanted a rain barrel, and her kids were really into it. So I'm like, you should take one of these home. And she was like, no, I'm not interested, thank you. You know, and I was like, oh man, you know, and like the sustainability expert in me wanted to be like, no, don't you understand the benefits of these rain barrels? But I let it go and just talked to her and hung out with her for a minute. And finally she said, you know, I don't understand, why are these rain barrels so small? And I was like, oh, well, this is what the legal allowable limits are now in the city of Boulder. She basically was like, this doesn't make any sense. So she starts showing me pictures on her phone of her home in South Sudan with her sister. And she's got a real rain barrel, and it's like 20 feet wide and maybe 15 feet high. And that's her idea of a rain barrel. And so I asked her, you know, what would you do with the water that you'd collect? And basically everything, clean the clothes, clean the dishes, cook with it. And they also kept goats for their livelihood. So the water was also for the goats. So, you know, I made all these jokes with her that she should come and present at a City of Boulder Council meeting and she could win some sort of sustainability award for knowing and conserving water so wisely.
That's Michelle Gabrieloff Parrish, who's the Energy and Climate Justice Program Manager at CU Boulder's Environmental Center. And we also heard from Angela Maria Ortiz Roja and Magnolia Landa Posas. And they're all with the FLOWS program. That's Foundations for Leaders Organizing for Water and Sustainability. And starting in 2019, KGNU will be partnering with FLOWS to bring you stories of people in the program and sharing the knowledge that exists in communities that often don't have a voice in policymaking around issues of sustainability. So we're excited to launch that series in 2019.